When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on with Don Lloyd, the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange and Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, welcome back.
Steve, thank you for having me back.
I'm going to focus in our conversation on popular currencies. I know you see a lot of these across your desk on a daily basis. Investors who might just be coming into this could use a little bit of a lesson. Talk to us a little bit about the popular ones these days.
Sure, right, exactly. The foreign exchange market, second oldest profession in the world and the largest, most liquid market in the world, sitting at $6 to $7 trillion over a 24-hour period flow through the foreign exchange market. So it's a rather big market. And there are major currencies and minor currencies. The major currencies tend to center around those economies out there in the globe that are very, very strong economies that are very much into international trade and free-flowing international trade. So, the usual suspects, as they always have been, the U.S. dollar, the euro representing the eurozone, the British pound sterling, Canadian dollar, Japan, Australia, those tend to be the major currencies, or what the world considers to be the major currencies. And to put it in perspective, the biggest of that is the U.S. dollar, obviously. So in foreign exchange, it's always a currency pair. The exchange is one currency against another. So $1 is worth so many yen, $1 is worth so many Swiss francs, one British pound is worth so many euros. One India rupee is worth so many Indonesia ringgit. There's just so many ways that you can go in these currency pairs. But when you look at that $6 to $7 trillion, 90% of those currency pairs involve the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar, really because of the U.S. economy and a couple other things I'm going to get into, that is the primary driver right now in the foreign exchange market, and has been really since World War II. So who are the other sides of that currency? It's really our big trading partners. And our biggest trading partners, Canada, Mexico, China, Japan, and Germany, in that order. So it pretty much represents the major currencies that are traded and the flows that move back and forth. Like I said, 90% of transaction, one side involves the U.S. dollar. Now compare that to the euro. 31% of transactions involve the euro. So it could be euro dollar. It could be euro sterling. It could be euro yen. Japan, currency pairs, 17% involve the Japanese yen, 13% the British pound, 7% the Chinese yuan. Now, the Chinese yuan is different because there's a lot of flow that goes back and forth in strict U.S. dollars. So it doesn't flow through the foreign exchange market. There's no conversion that occurs. China is very comfortable receiving payments in U.S. dollars. Their foreign exchange markets are a little bit more restrictive, a little bit more controlled. So, they encourage the U.S. dollar. They like the U.S. dollar. They're very comfortable with the U.S. dollar. Same with the Mexican peso. The second largest trading partner the U.S. has is Mexico. And they are very, very comfortable in transacting international trade in both the Mexican peso and the U.S. dollar, very comfortable in holding the U.S. dollar. So that's probably the biggest driver right there. A couple other ones, some currencies are pegged to the U.S. dollar. And what that means is they sit there and they fix an exchange rate. So as the dollar changes in value, the exchange rate to that country does not change to that country. It is a fixed exchange rate. It's a pegged exchange rate. So, there's really not a lot of trade that goes in there. These are usually minor countries that are trying to develop their economies, their foreign trade. So, you have that sort of section. On the other hand, you've got those energy countries that are out there, those that are focusing on gas, natural gas, oil, commodities like gold. These are all dollar-based commodities. So those countries tend to transact a lot of volume in U.S. dollars, as does the world. So those are really sort of the big drivers, and that really what defines the big currency pairs that are out there.
And some of those big currencies, you mentioned some of the things that they're tied to. Canada's a good example of that, right, where you have not only crude oil, but metals and minerals and other commodities. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you've got certain countries that they're big exports. They're big producers of commodities, you know, whether it's uranium, gold, silver, oil, natural gas. And those are called the commodity countries. So they can be Canada. Australia is another real good example of that. And as the price of oil and the price of natural gas and gold, they change in value compared to the U.S. dollar, those currencies will track very nicely against those commodity prices, whereas the U.S., much more diversified. I mean, we produce a lot of oil and natural gas and commodities as well, but we have a much more balanced, much more diversified economy that's out there. So the changes in oil and natural gas don't impact the U.S. dollar alone as much as it will do, say, Canada, or as much as it will do Australia. So you know, that's the interesting part of it. But because the U.S. is such 90% of transactions in the foreign exchange market, it really gives way to why the U.S. dollar is a reserve currency. The world is many people in the world, many countries in the world, they're comfortable holding U.S. dollars. You know, Steve, it's not like you and I have, you know, Chinese yuan or the British pound sterling stuck in underneath our mattress or in an account that we're holding, you know, that we're comfortable holding it. We're comfortable holding U.S. dollars because it is a reserve currency. There are other countries out there that are very comfortable holding U.S. dollars because of its safety, its security. Now, how long will that last? And how long will the U.S. be a reserve currency? Great question. You know, certainly it's not going to fall from status in my lifetime and probably not my children's lifetime, to be honest with you, you know, in my opinion. I know there's a lot of talk out there that the U.S. might be losing its position as the world's reserve currency. But replaced by what? I mean, if you're looking at the Chinese yuan, and there's a lot of talk about that, and China is certainly trying to negotiate trade transactions that are dollar-based, like dollar gold, oil, whatever, in Chinese yuan, you know, again, you're talking with a country that is not free-flowing exchange and free-flowing capital, that there are controls that are there. You know, to me, that is not, you know, a great place of confidence to hold that foreign asset, that foreign currency, you know, as a reserve currency. The U.S. will fall away from that at some point in time, you know, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, 500 years from now, who knows when that'll be. Because before the U.S. was the reserve currency, it was the British pound sterling that was the world's reserve currency. And before that, it was the Spanish peseta. And before that, it was the Portuguese escudo, going back hundreds of years. And what the two things that all of those four countries had in common when they would dominate, you know, for the world's reserve currency was, number one, they had very large economies and very large trade relationships around the globe. And number two, and this is the important thing, they controlled the oceans. They had a big military naval presence that controlled the seas. And right now, the U.S. controls the seas. And there's no one that comes close to us. I mean, just take a look at our aircraft carriers. The U.S. has 11 aircraft carriers that can be deployed anywhere in the world in very short notice and bring an immense amount of firepower. The second place countries are tied. You've got China. And you got Italy, those are two of the three, and they only have two aircraft carriers each. The U.S. controls the oceans, and that's not going to change anytime soon, and that is really going to also give way to the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency. So it's going to be the U.S. dollar against the euro, the pound sterling, the U.S. dollar against the Canada, the U.S. dollar against the Japanese yen, the U.S. dollar against Australia, simply because these are free markets. We have great trade relationships with them, and that's not going to change anytime soon, in my opinion.
Don, when does the trading volume in the Forex market go up? When do you see currency trading go up, and what are the events that cause that?
Yeah, you know, the things that make currency exchange rates move are basically economic events. You know, they can be the term structure of interest rates, the free flow of capital, looking for that risk and return trade-off. It can be future projections for interest rates. And, you know, we're certainly in that environment right now where people are trying to figure out where interest rates and inflation come out and really what the real return of investments are going to be. You know, where to park those dollars, you know, what's going to hold value and what's not. So it's really economic news. It's political news. You know, you had the elections in Turkey. You had elections over in Vietnam. You've got the U.S. elections coming up. Next year, so we're getting into that cycle again. And, you know, with every election that occurs comes a new way of thinking about monetary and fiscal policy. And what does that do to the economy? So you've got that part of it. So the first two of the three are the economy, the political environment, and then lastly is a psychological, what I call a psychological environment. And that is what the market expects of things to happen. Forward-looking, not backward-looking, but forward-looking. Is inflation going to go up? Who's going to be what administration is going to be in there? What's going to be their influence on fiscal and monetary policy? And it's a combination of those three things, like an amoeba. At any time, one can take over the other and carry more weight than the other two, or a combination of those. Usually it's about three or four things that drive it. But that's really the big drivers that are out there.
Do investors head to the Forex market, the currency market, when they want to hedge against other bets in their investments?
Yeah, there certainly is correlation. There's a couple companies that are out there that are very, very good at correlating commodity risk. They've got their little black boxes and their algorithms that are built, and they can sit there and say, okay, we have exposure to beef, we have exposure to corn, we have exposure to interest rates, we have exposure to foreign exchange, we have exposure to land, you know, to real estate. And they can sit there and, you know, throw that into a black box and sit there and say, for us to be balanced, you know, let's say we've got exposure to land, for example. That correlates highly with these commodities over here. So although we can't specifically hedge land, we can hedge them through the use of other commodities. And they crunch it through their black box and it spits out by this amount of interest rates, by sell this amount of currency, by this amount of gold. You know, it's very interesting to see those algorithms work and what kicks out on the other side. But we're talking very, very large companies with a lot of commodity exposure. Most businesses are just transactional. You know, they buy or sell some product or service from overseas. They're going to pay in non-U.S. dollars, and they're going to be paying in some future. That's the bulk of what companies are facing. And they don't know what the exchange rate's going to be 3 months from now, 6 months from now. So they want to lock into that exchange rate today so that they know what their dollar cost is going to be in 6 months. They might be right or wrong that it was a good decision, but that's not the value of the hedge. The value of the hedge is knowing that dollar cost today, so I can now plan for my cash flows going forward.
One of the currencies seeing volatility these days, and this might be a live example of that, is the rupee in India. What's going on in India?
Yeah, you know, to be 20 years old again, Steve, and to be starting the building of my portfolio, which I'm sort of a brick by brick builder, and that international section, if I was a young man again, would certainly be weighted quite nicely towards India. I mean, India is the up-and-coming country, in my opinion. You know, we talk about China today. I personally think China is sort of past its apex. It's sort of going to be on the down. They've had their moment in the sun, and everybody's sort of China-obsessed. It's India, I think, that where the real action is going to be for a number of reasons. You know, number one, they just, in 2023, they just became the most populated country in the world. They surpassed that of China just this year. Their economy forecast, when you look out the next 5 years, 10 years, their inflation is expected to come down, and they are expected to be the number one growing economy over the next 5 years on the face of the planet, in the globe. It's an incredible history that India has. When you look back, you know, 250 years ago, India was one of the most wealthiest countries on the planet. 250 years go by, and today it's one of the poorest. And there's a huge history and story that goes along with that, from the British colonialization of India, to the rebellions that occurred as the Indians didn't want the British to be in there. And then they sort of moved from this rebellious state to one of non-cooperation, you know, sort of Gandhi, let's be peaceful and let's just not cooperate. And the revenues left, the British colonies left, and India was left fractured. Now, this goes back 150 years ago, became a nation in 1947. But before that, you know, India has one of the most diversified groups when it comes to religion and race on the planet. It's absolutely an incredible melting pot of diversification. 120 different languages are spoken in India. You know, the primary religions being Hindu and Muslim, with 6%, you know, make up the rest of Christian and Buddhist. So, you know, that's sort of the rest of it sitting out there. The thing about India, though, is that it is a parliamentary, secular republic. So its government operates in this democratic, parliamentary process way. And it's very much over the last 20, 25 years, getting its act together and pulling this diversified group of people that make up India together to view themselves as Indians. Although there's different cultures, different languages, different races, different ethnicities. So that is really coming together nicely in India. The people over there are basically lower middle class people. And to get them to come up the curve into an upper middle class environment, upper middle class people, tremendous growth, especially when you're looking at the number of people that are over in India. They are going to surpass China, have surpassed China as far as I'm concerned. They are going to be the dominant group going forward. They would certainly be part of my personal portfolio if I was 20 years old. I won't be around 25 years from now, but this would certainly have it if I was a young man today.
All right, Don, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure. I'm on the trading desk. I can be reached at 866-524-8836. Happy to chat as long as anybody wants to talk.
All right, Don. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time.
Great. Thanks, Steve.